The following podcast is brought to you by Radio Southland and New Zealand On Air. Radio Southland is a community access media station based in Invercargill, New Zealand. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, radiosouthland.org.nz, for our contact details.
Hi everyone, I'm Nick and I'm the host of Nightlife at Radio Southland, where me and my co-hosts talk about the weird, wild and wonderful aspects of history and historical martial arts. Our plays are every Wednesday and Sunday and you can find us on Spotify. We'd love for you to tune in. And welcome back to Nightlife. I'm joined by my co-host George, and today we are talking about the fencing masters of old. What were their lives like? How did they fit into medieval society? And what knowledge do we have that they've passed down from centuries long forgotten? But before we get into that, we have a few things to address. Primarily is my pronunciation of cavalry last week. I got told, I said cavalry. We're talking about the Battle of Hastings and Stamford Bridge. And it got pointed out that it is pronounced cavalry. Cavalry is where Jesus died, apparently. So that's a bit of a mistake on my end. I apologize for that. I will attempt to pronounce it cavalry from now. I have to do that on purpose now.
Yeah.
And cavalry. I'm going to make sure I'm going to say that properly. Cavalry. Cavalry.
Cadbury.
No, don't do that to me or I'll go like, and then he mounted the Cadbury and that will go about as good as you think it's going to go. Me and George are also senior members of the Invercargill Medieval Club, where we practice historical fencing and historical martial arts. We train every Tuesday and Thursday at Aurora College. You can find us on your Facebook or your Instagram. Come check us out. We're newcomers are always welcome. Now that all of the advertising for our club and my vocabulary debacle, we can get into the main point of this episode.
Let's go.
Which is fencing masters. Now, historical fencing, you need sources, right? We don't have the weapons like long swords and rapier and stuff. We don't use them in warfare anymore. And most
as much as we want to.
As much as we would like to. And the line of fencing masters, you know, you would have this guy who was trained by this guy who was trained by this guy. We don't have that anymore. All of them are dead. Well, not. There are some, like I know in Hungary, there are some saber schools that have that can actually trace their lineage back to proper and warfare.
Same in Japan as well, wouldn't there be?
Yeah, oh, Japan.
Some of those Asian
countries. Yeah, with Japan's Kendo and Bushido, a lot of those schools can trace their lineage back to like samurai and soldiers who fought in actual battles, and that is because the samurai class like stopped being soldiers. That didn't always really happen in Europe, because even up until World War One, they were still using swords and such. So a lot of them did actually die in World War One, which is tragic.
But their schools are still kind of going. Yeah.
It's just that there's not really any, you know, this guy who was trained. There's not really a lineage to speak of. It's simply taking the techniques left behind and reading those. And that is what we do. We take the techniques, the manuals, the writings of these people and these fencing masters, and we apply them in a practical fencing setting with proper gear and armor, etc., to recreate the martial art. And that is what the sport is taking these treatises and these techniques, and then learning them and fighting with them. And you wanted to talk about Maya today.
Yeah. George. So I've been, Sean kind of got me into learning Maya's sword style. It's quite versatile, where he has many different weapons that he kind of goes over. And the footwork and such can be kind of transitioned between it all. It's quite all-encompassing is a good way of putting it. He was a late 1500s, so 16th century fencing master. He started off as a cutler, so basically he made cutlery. He was a knife maker, I believe, is the
he made knives.
The direct, not translation, but the meaning behind the word cutler is he made knives. And he basically did that for a living while also being a fencing and swords master on the side.
Because was he nobility?
No, he wasn't nobility. I don't actually know
He was a free folk.
Yeah, he was a free free fencer. One of the self-proclaimed terms he gave himself was that he was a free fencer. So he just kind of went about, did his own thing, and he started a few schools and such, and taught people. He was taught, I believe, by Johannes Lichtenauer, who was one of a quite prestigious German fencer.
Yeah, well, we have treatises from Lichtenauer. Mm. I know several people who know Lichtenauer, like who train with the Lichtenauer style.
So the Meyer style kind of builds on the Lichtenauer style, because he learned from him and developed his style further from it.
I'm going to preemptively apologize on both our behalves because I'm going to have to pronounce Italian. I speak a little German. I don't speak no Italian. And as the 100 Years War series have probably taught everyone, I don't speak French either. So we do apologize for any mispronunciations that do occur. But that kind of goes into what I was saying with how Kendo and Bushido in Japan works. Mm. You have this guy who was trained by this guy who was trained by this guy, and you see that here too. We have your Maya was trained by Lichtenauer, who was trained by whoever Lichtenauer was trained by, I don't know. And you go back far enough, and then you get people who were in actual battles, who went to proper. You know, it stops becoming a historical art and starts becoming an art of the time.
Yeah.
And one of the main people who we train in the techniques of is a man called George Silver. And George Silver was an Englishman who was born in the 16th century. He was described gentleman and fencing master who
a lot of them are self-proclaimed. I feel
it's one of those things where their manuals survive, but other writings about them don't necessarily. Andre Lignitzer, another master who I know the techniques of with his sword and buckler, is a really good example of this, because Andre Lignitzer, we have six plays of his fencing manual, but we don't actually know anything about him. He might not even be a. So there's another fencing master called Andre the Jew, Andres Juden, right? Who is associated with Lichtenauer. And the issue is Andre Lignitzer and Andre the Jew might be the same person, but they might not. And that is, And that is because
there's not much about their private life.
There's not much outside of Andre Lignitzer's treatise and some mentions of him being a master of arms in like whatever city. I can't remember what city it was. There, you know, we have his guide, and he has, and that would make sense because a lot of his sword and buckler is very Meyer Lichtenauer-esque. So it's certainly possible that even if it was a separate person, Andre Lignitzer and Andre the Jew, even if they're separate people, both of them clearly took inspiration from Lichtenauer and much as Meyer did as well. So it's by that, you know, that this person trained by this person. And that's why I think the HEMA, Historical European Martial Arts, community is really cool, because it's that line of this person trained by this person has been broken.
It's keeping an art alive.
Exactly. It's keeping a really rich history and culture alive.
Yeah.
And to see it grow, you know, it's, I would still consider it a niche sport.
I would think it's definitely getting more up there in popularity in recent years, though. Yeah.
It's not as fringe as it used to be. No. And I definitely think social media and YouTube
has definitely helped.
YouTube has played a massive role in not only like getting it out there, but also accessibility.
Yes.
Because not every place has a HEMA club, but now you can watch people recreate these techniques from the treatises.
And you can just make your own club, you know?
Yeah, yeah. There's an Italian YouTuber called Federico De Liberace. He has a whole series where he literally just goes through all the plays from like Fiore's treatises.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so even, you know, so you can actually look at, because sometimes the treatises are hard to read.
Yeah, yeah. There's a very similar one for Maya as well. Someone, I forget which channel it is, but Sean showed it to me. A full channel of someone who's gone through the book and they've demonstrated and read it out for everyone who's watching. But no, yeah.
Yeah. But so we've talked a bit about some of the masters. You know, we've mentioned George Silva, Andre Lignitzer, Maya, Fiore. What do they actually write down, you know, because we say treatises and manuals, and we did an episode a wee while ago. Please check that out on our Spotify if you listen to us on Radio Southland or Free FM and you missed that episode. But we talked a bit about some of the manuals, but what is actually in the manuals? For a lot of them, sometimes it's literally just writing. Like, it is, there are certain terms like overhaul or overhead strike that they use, and they simply describe how you strike without any kind of illustration.
Mm.
So that is why there are a lot of manuals. Like I-33 is a good example of a lot of I-33's plays don't have pictures. So it's up to you to decipher what they are meaning when they are describing certain strikes and techniques. And because these aren't written in ink, with the exception of Paradoxes of Defense by George Silva, none of these that we've mentioned were written in English.
Yeah.
They were written in High German or old Italian and have been translated multiple times into modern English. Or even George Silva's Paradoxes of Defense is, you know, it's like middle English-ish.
Like, yeah, it'll be like not old English.
Like middle English around Shakespeare's time, right? Like it's not indecipherable. You could read it, but like you'd have an easier time.
Yeah, yeah.
If you won't have a particularly easy time for certain descriptions.
Yeah.
Of it, but George Silva is unique in that his Paradoxes of Defense has pictures.
Maya's also unique. He doesn't have pictures, I don't think, in the books themselves, but he had a wood burning. I think it was called like the JMR or something. I can't remember the actual term for it, but it basically was a wood burning where it had every single diagram, like for someone posing and such. It was burnt onto a slab of wood.
Oh, right. So he had it on a slab of wood, and then you would look at that as your guide. Oh, that's pretty nifty.
He used that as his like diagram to teach people, basically. And then that was put into a library with his books, I believe.
Oh, that's pretty cool, actually. Fiore, we just have some pictures from Fiore. If anyone out there is wanting to look at these treatises, there is a lovely website called Wiktenauer, Wiktenauer, and it is a project where they translate and display different HEMA or historical European martial arts books and manuscripts. They have histories of the authors, authors and masters, and it's all free, and you can access it on the internet, and this is where we get a lot of our sources from. So they have different translations of it from in different languages. They have broader historical context, such as for Fiore, it mentioned Fiore favors the overhaul, the overhead strike, and that is because he was someone who trained not to duel, but he also did train for warfare. He was a marshal. He was entrusted with the defense of a city during the, I believe it was the Aquilian Succession War.
Oh, yeah.
He inspected artillery. He did all that. So there's a lot of context like that that it can provide, like a history of the masters themselves. And a good thing is, another thing is George Silver, who we take, how we teach at the Invercargill Medieval Club is we were all taught George Silver and we use that as our base. It is very, I don't want to say basic, but it gives, it's a really strong base, in my opinion. There are a lot of people who say, no, George Silver is not a good master to teach from. But in my opinion, it provides a good base of footwork,
yeah,
a good base of four corners of wards, so that's starting and finishing positions.
It's not too advanced.
I don't want to say simple, because I use a lot of techniques from there.
But the point of it is because they needed to train people fast and easy, so they had to have something simple to teach. And then you could build on top of that with more techniques. So basic stuff from George Silver is very simple, but there are some very intense and very technical techniques in his treatise.
Exactly. But the reason I think that basic stuff is really good is because you can take that and you can apply it to other treatises, other weapons. You know, you say your arming sword or your one-handed sword, you take those, you know, the six cuts, right? You can apply that, you can swap that sword with an axe, you can swap swap it with a hammer.
You can even swap it with a long sword, and you can still do the basic motions, and it'll roughly be the same.
And the footwork especially, also, footwork is, in my opinion, the most important aspect of HEMA.
Most
and
definitely, yeah. If you don't have good footwork, you're not going to be able to fence properly, because you'll be overstepping, you'll be putting yourself off balance, which makes your strikes weaker. Yeah, it's one of the most fundamental parts.
That's why always footwork. For every lesson, footwork. You know, even just as a warm-up, you drill that footwork into you. It should be second nature. You should be able to down several whiskies and your footwork should still. That's not something we actually test, by the way. That is a joke.
Like that he knows.
No, I have not downed several whiskies and then tried to fight someone. I have not done that.
That would be a wide oversight.
That would be a very poor lapse in my judgment. Yeah. Probably land me in like prison. So we take George Silver's techniques, paradoxes of defense, teach that as a base, and then people use that base in footwork, of distancing, of timing, and they apply it to other techniques that they like, other weapons. And we don't solely teach George Silver. Like, once you say take the buckler into account, I teach a lot of buckler is a small shield the size of a plate. I teach a lot of Andre Lignitzer techniques from that, a bit of I-33 here and there. And like you and Sean with your rapier, that footwork, that tempo or timing. Okay, now I know this is ironic, because in George Silver's book, he goes at length about how much he does not like the rapier. And I don't like George Silver as a person. Historically, I think he was a horrible person. But I have to agree with him, because I don't like the rapier very much at all.
Yeah, if you don't understand it, you know.
It's not that I don't understand it. I just understand it, and I think it's stupid. No offense to all my rapier guys and gals out there. But
I feel offended.
George Silver, he details in his book what he sees as the flaws of, of the rapier.
Yeah, but he's thinking of it as, I'm fighting a rapier with an arming sword. There's definitely a flaw of, you can just bat it out of the way if you know how to fight against it.
Yeah. Well, that's George Silver's coming from, like, knights of old, like, full armor with a long sword.
Yeah, rapier is not intended to be used on the battlefield. Yeah. It was a dueling weapon.
And then you have, like, these Spanish and Italian guys coming at me, just stabbing someone. Yeah. There's no elegance, there's no technique, it's just stab.
Oh, yeah.
Stab. I don't mind fighting with it. It's, in all seriousness, it's fine. I'd rather
it's
not.
Fine.
It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. I'll take a sword. I will take a knightly sword and buckler any day of the week.
Nah, you're lost.
I will throw back to when I made Sean trip in the mud.
That was the mud, not you.
That was totally me. It was totally me. But What where was I going with this?
I don't know. Eh?
I think I was. I just
you're going somewhere.
I just thought, oh yeah, I don't like the Reaper yet. I just decided to get mad. But like on that, there he doesn't like the Reaper. I'm not a terribly big fan of it either. But that kind of goes into I see a lot online of people being like. You know, George Silver aficionados, if you will, he'd be like, I will never touch a rapier ever. And I'm like, no, that is your loss. Like, I prefer other weapons, but, like, you give me a rapier, I'm going to fight with it. I want to learn.
I mean, because there's definitely, like, since picking up the rapier myself and me and Sean sparring every now and then, it is so fun.
Yeah. Like, it's a very different kind of weapon. Oh,
yeah, definitely. There's a certain joy in being able to strike quickly and elegantly while being as threatening as someone using an arming sword or a knightly sword.
Yeah.
It's just so fun being able to move so quickly with it.
But, I remember where I was going. A lot of these rapier books have, like, there's, like, a grid, like, a footwork grid.
Yeah.
And it's like, you should go there. This happens, you should go. I'm like... No, I think that's just needlessly stupid.
That's what I like about Meyer's treatises as well. He's not that strict on footwork. The main thing he talks about is he states how you need to have your feet, but he doesn't state that they need to be in specific positions for certain techniques and moves.
Yeah,
it's more of just do what's comfortable, but stay in this very sturdy, very stable position.
That's why when I say grid, I mean like there's a piece of paper and then there is a bunch of lines like around a circle, and it's like and then there are marks marking this is where you should plant your feet to do XYZ.
Yeah,
and I'm like I base my opinion off of over 6 years of being a historical fencer is that is needlessly complex.
Oh,
you fully. Can accomplish the same thing by telling someone fundamentally, this is what your footwork is trying to achieve. For George Silver or Fiore, it's you are dealing with slashing weapons. You want to plant your feet in a way that stops you from being thrown off balance and squares your shoulders so that you're not, you know, sticking out. You don't want to be like Olympic fencing where you're on your side trying to not get stabbed.
Yeah,
you're wanting to not get slashed. You're wanting to minimize your target horizontally.
I think the idea is also it comes down to what you're using as well. With the knightly sword, it is more about you need to constantly keep this sturdy footwork, but like you have the freedom of being able, you need the freedom of being able to move in any kind of way you can while still doing any technique at any stage. There's a different, I think the difference is with rapier, some rapier styles and such, like, I think it is more, not, which one is it? It's the Italian, like Spanish and all that kind of stuff. The rapier styles, I think it's mainly Italian. Spanish is a bit more free flowing, but there's a lot of getting in and specific, you have to move and manipulate your opponent's movement to match your movement so you can get in with the thrust.
Yeah.
It's very calculated, very mind gamey kind of, and you need to make sure you're at the perfect position you want to be so your opponent can't retaliate.
I want to preface, when I say I don't like rapier, I'm not saying it's stupid, it's less of a weapon, and I'm certainly not saying anyone who wants to do rapier is stupid or a bad you're not a bad fencer, George. Sean's not a bad fencer, right? You guys are rather good with the rapier. It's just my preference.
Oh, no.
I feel like there are weapons that are more reliable, that I enjoy using more, and that have, I think the flaws of a knight, like a sword and buckler, are far more forgiving than the flaws of a rapier. And a lot of the techniques are just needlessly complex with a rapier. That's not to say I don't enjoy, I know some rapier techniques. I've enjoyed fighting with and against rapiers before. It's simply my belief there are better weapons out there. No disrespect to my rapier friends out there.
I'm gonna come at you with a halberd next week, you know.
Yeah
using Meyer's halberd techniques. That's one of the things I really love about Meyer's treatises is he doesn't focus on rapier or anything like that. That's one small section of his book. I think his main section comes from talking about pole arms and like the longsword.
Yeah.
Which I think he's more known for the longsword as well, to be honest.
I think it's really cool that we can be so passionate about books written 600
I know,
years
ago.
These are little books and pictures, and there are multiple interpretations to each treatise, specifically because you've got, like, you know, illustration. I say pictures like they took photos. These are illustrations and descriptions, and different people have different ideas about what this means, like what each means. You can have multiple people take the same section of I-33 and come out with completely different interpretations of it. And that's kind of the modern sport, is interpreting it in a way that works.
I've even seen records of like people not even having like illustrations in their books, and someone has found old illustrations from someone's like sketchbook of people training, and someone sketching down their poses and what positions they're staying in, what they're using for striking, and they've taken those illustrations and put them with the techniques in the book that match up with them. And it's just like a really cool art of being able to look at this, be like, okay, this matches with this, let's combine that and hope. Let's hope it works.
Let's hope that, again, it kind of, it's for people who aren't like academically inclined, like, you know, we enjoy reading this stuff and we'll teach it in a practical manner. But when you want to go and look at the treatises yourself, it becomes a very academic sort of practice, doesn't it?
Yeah. Like,
I
found myself skimming over pages a lot of times trying to find the stuff I want.
Yeah. But it's like any kind of, it's like history or archaeology, right? You have to like piece a lot of stuff together. There's a lot of, that's why I like Wikinawa. As a website, they provide a lot of more context. They have multiple translations. So if you are looking at one translation and you're like, that doesn't make sense, you can go to another translation and it might be more clear to you, you know? Especially if they're using terminology like Oberhau, Underhau, like from the eagle, like stuff that if you're not a swordsman, you're not going to know what that means, right? I don't think the listeners know what from the eagle means.
I don't even know if I know what it means.
That is like from when you are holding the sword directly above your head from the eagle's claw.
Yes.
So you go from the eagle is a strike descending from your head.
I think I know it from a different name.
Oh, just Oberhau is just any kind of overhead strike, really.
Yeah.
Well, that is all the time we have today. I want to thank everyone for listening to us on Radio Southland and Free FM. It's always a pleasure, and we hope you'll join us next week. This podcast is available on the accessmedia.nz app. You just look for the Kiwi Fruit logo. We're also available on iHeartRadio and Spotify. You can find us on your podcast app. You can also download these episodes from the Radio Southland website. I'm Nick, I'm joined by my co-host George, and you've been listening to Nightlife.
The preceding podcast was brought to you by Radio Southland with the support of New Zealand On Air. Their funding of accessmedia.nz makes these podcasts available. To find similar programs by other stations involved, go online to accessmedia.nz.